You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hello, and welcome to another fabulous episode of Dear Multi-Hyphenate. I'm your host, Michael Kushner. Let's get this episode going. I have the incredible Scott Barnhart as my guest. Funny, brilliant, everything you want as in an artist. We explain how we met in the episode, but I made a lifelong friend. I also just wanted to send out, you know, love to my previous guest, Rob Madge, who was part of my 100th episode celebration, as we were talking about my son's a queer, but what can you do? And shortly after we released the episode, they announced a postponement to My Son's a Queer on Broadway, which hopefully will be coming next season. It is not easy putting on a show on Broadway, but you should still listen to the episode and talk about how it at least got to where it went and hopefully will be coming to Broadway. There's still so much to learn and listen to in regards to putting on your own solo show and having it, you know, go into a commercial space. There's so much to risk, but I have a feeling we'll be seeing My Son's a Queer soon, and I really, really hope that it's in a Broadway space, because Rob really, really, you know, deserves that, and I think the story really needs to be told as well. But yeah, my heart goes out to them and the crew and creatives involved, and it's really tough out there, but here we are. We're pushing through. We're still creating. We're keeping our heads held high, even though what is the industry right now? I mean, it's so unpredictable and so wild. But you know, in these wild times, our job is to create and stay creative and stay focused, and that's what we have to do, and that's what I'm trying to do. So this episode definitely helps. Please rate, subscribe, comment. Tell your friends, your family, all that good stuff, and leave a review. Leave a review on Apple Podcasts. It really helps. Really, really, really helps. And follow on social media. I'm at Dear Multi-Hyphenate on Instagram and at The Michael Kushner on Instagram and TikTok. And I'm also running a sale at Michael Kushner Photography, a Valentine's Day sale. It's $143 off your next photo shoot, and I chose that because that's I love you. Remember saying 143? No, my husband doesn't, and we almost got into a fight this morning because I was trying to explain to him what 143 meant, and I thought it was universal, but it's okay. We made it through. But yes, if you use the code I love you at michaelkushnerphotography.com when booking, I'll take $143 off your next photo shoot with me in spirit of Valentine's Day. And that expires on February 16th. So that's just for the rest of the week. But you might be listening to this 2 years from now, in which case there's going to be more sales. So, you know, head to michaelkushnerphotography.com and do your photo shoot. This is from me two years ago. What am I even talking about? All right, let's do this episode. Scott Barnhart is a musical theater actor, theater maker, writer, educator, and independent education consultant. He is also the owner and creator of the Creative College Journey, a bespoke approach to college guidance working exclusively with creative applicants, writers, filmmakers, actors, dancers, for example, helping families handle both the academic and artistic aspects of a college application with the goal to lower stress and increase clarity and enjoyment through the process. Scott has been on Broadway in The Book of Mormon and also the Deaf West Broadway revival of Big River at Roundabout. He is the recipient of many awards and grants and is an incredible educator in masterclasses, workshops, and just brilliant, brilliant, brilliant person. Get into him, listen to the episode, follow him on social media, contact him through the website, and I hope you learned something. I really love this conversation. And again, please rate, subscribe, comment, leave a review, tell your friends, your family, and reach out. Hi, Scott. How are you?
Hi, my friend. It's so good to see you.
Now, who is your Elphaba?
How dare? How dare?
Okay, so this, here's the thing about this story. We've only met once in person, but I feel like I have a forever friend, which I love.
Truly, truly.
I think that, you know, those situations like Florida State Thespians, like, you know, those really intense, like, 2-3 day, 5 day things where you're just sort of thrown into a strange city with people that have the same common interests, and there's all of these weird things happening, like a bunch of kids singing "Murder, Murder" from Jekyll and Hyde, and a bunch of crazy thespian mom drama mamas and all of this stuff, and we sort of find each other to hold on tight. And I feel like what happens in those sort of situations is that you kind of get the craziest stories and the craziest experiences. And we found each other through like Nick Searley and who else
and
was
Lauren,
there?
Lauren Molina.
And
it was so fun. I mean, cause it was so deeply intense. Like the students are intense. The parents are intense. We're all a little bit intense.
Yeah.
And so like, all the little like interactions, it feels so heightened.
Yeah.
The whole experience was so heightened.
This was Florida State Thespians and
yes.
Of Tampa. This past year. And it was just, you know, I grew up doing it in high school, and then I now do it as an adjudicator and educator and workshop giver. But it's always really fun to like see like new people that are like you that have not done it, this specific one before.
Oh,
like
that was my first.
Eric Altimus too. Like,
and oh,
to
yeah.
Be, and to be like this, like, come, like, it's fun. It's fun. And to watch you like explore and see what that's like. But this one was so special in so many different ways. And I loved the group that we had. And we went out to dinner for anyone listening. That's like, what are you even talking about? We went out to dinner and we just, I'm sorry, I'm going to say it. We just didn't. And it was a bunch of gays. We just didn't know. And Sarah Hamity, right? It was like,
yep.
Yeah. So it was just a bunch of gays and our friend Sarah. And
that's a book title right in and of itself.
A bunch of gays and our friend Sarah. I love that. We just couldn't figure out. I'm sorry, I'm gonna say it. We just couldn't figure out if our waiter was gay or not. And it was really important. So we started
and we spent a copious amount of time planning, strategizing, and doing like research testing on like different questions. Nope, that didn't work. Oh, nope, that didn't work.
Oh, maybe like, bye.
Maybe, yeah. We spent, no one ever asked the just overt question. It was, but we, so many cues and clues.
So we were sitting at this table being like, all right, what is a good way to be like, well, okay, what's your favorite night to go downtown Tampa and dance? Because we knew that like Thursday night was a gay night at one of the clubs. So we were like, and he was like Wednesday, and we're like, oh, straight. And then he said something else that we were like, nope,
maybe.
So then Wicked was in town and we were like, so my way of gay code was talking about Wicked. So I was like, all right, Wicked's in it. Have you seen Wicked? And he was like, I haven't seen it like since like 2007, maybe. And I went, well, who was your Elphaba?
It's the funniest question.
Thinking...
And it told us everything.
Because he responded,
what?
Who's Elphaba? And that put
And it. We're like, got it.
Got it. Yep. Got it. I'll have the steak medium rare.
Thank you. We're done here. We're good.
That was
then it was the piece de resistance was was it Eric?
Was it Josh?
It was Josh.
Josh.
Josh left a note on the receipt.
On the receipt
and left his number. And was like, hey, you know, like, you basically just like giving him his number.
Right.
And then we had moved on to another establishment and we get a phone call.
Yeah. No, it was a text. It was a text.
Oh, it was a text. It was a text. And he's like, hey, it's your waiter.
And we were like, oh my God, dang.
He's like, you forgot to tip. We
didn't leave a tip.
And that was on me. It was on my, it had been on my card. And we were so, and I was mortified. Oh my God.
But it's a good thing we left the number. I mean,
we left the number. So he contacted us and then we Venmo'd him a hearty tip and
went on
with
her.
Not a gay one, not a gay tip.
God, that was not a gay tip. Not the tip.
And then we had a whole, like, oh God, then that just spurred, I mean, 4 hours of conversation we talked.
Oh, we were.
It was incredible.
It was such a great night. And are you planning to be at Thespians this year?
I've put in my, I put in my little application, so we shall see.
I put in my application too, so I'm hoping for another year of fun.
Yeah, I had such a good, I love the Thespian events. They're so fun.
Me too.
And I grew up, I didn't have Thespian Festival growing up.
Where did
I went
you grow
to
up?
In California, in Southern California, Orange County. And there was Thespians, like it was a thing. But because I went to a school of the arts, we were sort of like siloed. We didn't participate in that world. And it wasn't until I hit college and we did like the ACTF festival, the American College Theater Festival, where I got my first taste of it. And oh, I was like, you get to bring all the theater nerds together in one place? Like, that's a thing? I love it. I love those sort of events.
So I went to a performance. It's so interesting to see how theater education is so different for so many different people. Like, there's, you know how with like pre-med, like there's sort of a track and there's things.
It's super linear. It's like, you can very much see, like, if I do this and do this and do this, I can become pre-med and thereby I can become a doctor. Thereby, there's a very clear path.
And, I went to a performing arts school, but, one of the absolute requirements was Thespians, because what it did was I went to American Heritage School in Fort Lauderdale, and it was like the best of the best in everything, whether or not it was academics, whether or not it was sports, whether or not it was theater. Though you were expected to bring home the gold. And I think Thespians was a really good way for the theater department to say, we are critics' choice. This is our home run. This is our touchdown. This is that. This is the we won 3-0. Like, the critics' choice, the superior is going to states. That it was but it was an incredible, because when I was in high, so now it's more of a like a sharing process. Lindsay Warfield, who was the just the previous chair, really made
shout out Lindsay,
we love you Lindsay, made it be a more of a sharing experience. When I grew up and it was like cutthroat, we walked in black turtlenecks, like in a line being like, bow down bitches, like it was like competition. Yeah. And it's so interesting to see that change, but it's also so interesting. And, you work a lot with, you were in More Men on Broadway. You are an actor and an incredible artist, but you're also now working in the college prep setting, especially with Creative College Journey, which we're going to talk about. But it's so interesting to watch how the journey of theater students prep for life and how certain things sort of change. And what is your sort of initial thoughts on that? Because you see it. You see those trends change.
I see it firsthand. And, having been in, the high school of the arts that I went to, I also ran their musical theater program for close to 4 years.
Wow.
So I've also was, a administrator, educator, like in the trenches.
Wow.
And then I worked for a college as well. So I've been on every angle of it. And I think what's wild is that there's this like inverse correlation. You would think there are so many more theater education opportunities at college right now. Like there's tons. There's so many places where you can train, where you can study, where you can, you know, we are in the most abundant time in terms of education. Mm-hmm. Yet the scarcity of like, if I don't do exactly this, my entire career is ruined. Mm-hmm. That has taken such a grip on the process. And so many people, you know, at 17 feeling like they're so behind and they're missing the big picture of what they're actually after, and working on goals and life goals, career goals, creative goals, rather than if I don't get into, you know, insert prestigious university here, I'm ruined. Mm-hmm. And if they can really start to see the goals, they tend to see more pathways forward and many more different and many more options, diverse options that might serve them better than, say, you know, a school that only takes, you know, 16 people.
I think this is really a great conversation for young people and parents to listen to. Because, you know, you're the owner and creator of the Creative College Journey. And
correct.
You say it's a bespoke approach to college guidance, working exclusively with creative applicants, helping families handle both the academic and artistic aspects of a college application with the goal to lower stress and increase clarity and enjoyment throughout the process. I think that is incredible. I talk a lot about the why or your statement, you know, your thematic statement, whatever it is. And I think that's incredibly clear and specific. But I also think it really ties into the multi-hyphenate.
Because, 100%.
You know, because it's like, yeah, we could talk right now, like, about you being a multi-hyphenate. I think that's really important, of course, like, how you went from, you know, establishing Creative College Journey after being directed by Julie Andrews in The Boyfriend, you know what I mean, and doing virtual shows and teaching here and doing all this stuff. That's wonderful. And I have a lot of guests that come up and talk about it. But I think, and this is why I'm really starting to teach being a multi-hyphenate at NYU and Norwalk Conservatory. It's like, I think what's also really helpful is understanding how, and why I wrote a book on this, why, how younger artists can start implementing that into their journey from a younger age. So what to you is the importance of being a multi-hyphenate, and where does that sort of start in the exploration?
I think it should be from get-go, honestly. If it were up to me, if I were, you know, king of the mountain and I got to say how all arts education was, I would actually say the idea of being curiously creative is key. Testing out all the different ideas and options. You know, I talk with clients all the time. It's like, people need permission. Because of, you know, however our society has sort of deemed artists as, you know, irrational, you're going to drink, you know, gin at noon every day, you're going to be broke, you're going to be destitute, you're going to be a drug addict, right? Those are the stories about becoming an artist. So everyone's coming to literally training in the arts with a little bit of anxiety, a little social anxiety. And the quickest way around that, I find, is play, is exploration, is seeing all the things that you're good at, rather than putting everything into one basket. Even if you are primarily focused in one sphere of art, adding to that, finding your Venn diagram, finding out where you overlap. You know, for me, it's so funny. It's taken me, you know, 44 years to find my true Venn diagram. I'm a theater nerd. I love all things theater, creativity. I love teaching. I picked that up. I learned, like, I love being in the classroom. I love guiding people and opening people's eyes to different concepts and ideas. And I also love being a business owner. I love calling my own shots. I love the idea of all decisions are made through my ethos and through my morals and through my point of view. Put those together, I was like, oh, the Creative College Journey, I found it. Like, I literally found a solopreneur lane that deals with theater, education, creativity, and being able to call my own shots through that. And the difference in job satisfaction is like, it's wild. It's wild.
It's so funny. Yes, 100%. It's so funny because at the beginning of my book, I talk about the stereotypes of being a starving artist and what that means, yep. right? But it's sort of wild because, you know, you don't, the Hotel Chelsea doesn't exist like it used to anymore.
yeah.
You know, Joni Mitchell and Patti Smith, and for those of you listening to this episode with your parents, kids, young people, please Google these people, read Just Kids, you know, get
into read Just Kids, Just Kids.
Of course, and really dive deep into what being a starving artist was, and that the trope, you know, of a starving artist isn't what's true and what you see in a sitcom, right? Like Joey and Correct. Friends. It's not, maybe it was like that at one time, but it's not like that anymore, especially because a lot of actors are approaching their acting business as a small business. Like they're not approaching it as actors anymore. They're approaching Correct. It as a small business, which I'm both here and there about. I think leaning into that to an extent is healthy, but going just a little over, I've seen a lot of social media influencers, a lot of strong actors lean into more of the selling as opposed to like the meat and potatoes of the art. And it starts to become they're opening their briefcase to like show the model of the swimming pool energy, you know, where it's like, all right, you're showing us that you're this, but where is it? And maybe if you focused more on other things, you would be
the doing. Yeah.
The doing, you know what I mean? So yeah. I think you should absolutely lean into the business aspect of being an actor, of course. But there's, I think, a line that is crossed. But regardless, there is, and I've said this in other episodes before, being in the theater, forget even TV film, you can find extremely lucrative ways to make six figures in the industry and be a theater artist. And when yep. I tell people this, when I tell parents this, when I tell young artists this, when I tell even my friends this, they look at me like they're like, what?
Yep. Let alone the transferable skills.
Right.
Let alone the transferable skills of taking the art of empathy, the art of reading a room, the right. art of communication, the art of public speaking, and placing that in literally any industry in the world. Like, so there is so much to exactly to your point, there is so much opportunity.
So where do you start? Where does it start? Because it's like when you're about to be a college grad and you're a junior and you're looking for colleges to audition for, you're signing up for Unifieds, you're thinking of your 16 bar cuts, your 32 bar cuts, your Shakespeare monologue, whatever they want. Where do you have time to start to think about anything else?
To me, it's the cart before the horse. Uh-huh. Like, in your junior year, I truly believe, I've had a lot of people sort of like go like, do those 16-year-olds, 17-year-olds really like respond to those questions that you ask? I was like, yeah, they've got big thoughts and they actually have a stronger grasp of what it is they want out of their life than we ever give them credit for. And so to me, it's like, I don't think if you're spending $80,000 a year in college, can you afford not to understand your why? I don't think so. And so I often like where I start, and where the easiest spot I find is to start with a creative student. Usually, generally, these are students who dedicate crazy amounts of time to their art in comparison to a typical high school student. Mm-hmm. Like if you talk to any theater student, they are in that theater 20 hours a week. Bare minimum, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I go to that and go, why? What's driving you? What's yeah. driving you? You could just as easily spend those 20 hours studying for your APs, or, you know, hanging out on the couch, or going to a football game, but you're choosing to spend those 20 hours a week in that theater, mm-hmm. and you love it and you want more of it. Why? Mm-hmm. What's at the core of it? And usually that gives us a lot of information. It's like, I do a lot of like quizzes sort of about like the creative type. What kind of a type are you? What drives you? What are your creative drivers? Do you want to get good? Are you just trying to get mastery over the art? Are you hoping to get paid for your art? Are you hoping to, like, you know, become famous, get clout for your art? P.S. Those are different things. Like, you can be good at the art and not get paid. You could be not good at the art and get paid. They're separate things.
Happens all the time.
Turn on Netflix. You'll see it.
Literally.
The idea of, like, are you out to change the world in some meaningful way? Are you an advocate? Are you doing it to heal yourself? A lot of people join theater, you know, as a mode of self-expression, as a mode of healing, as a mode of being seen. Maybe you just enjoy it. Maybe it's purely recreational. And if you start to really understand, and maybe it's a little combination of a few of those, and they change, right? They change as you grow, they change as you age. But that baseline conversation can really help dictate what makes sense about the next step into college. If you're really driven because you're, you know, you just love theater and it's recreational and it's fun and I just like the people, well, then maybe the BFA conservatory isn't going to be a great space for you to continue your creative work. Versus if you're hell-bent on becoming the best, well, that's maybe going to motivate and inform where you want to go to school.
It's so funny because if you would have, if we would have had this conversation when I was auditioning for colleges, right? I think I would have ultimately said, I just want to be better. And I wound up going to Ithaca, which I loved, and I wound up being better. But also at the same time, it's just what you did. You just tried to get into the top 10 theater. What are they called?
Yep.
Schools. Thank you.
Yep. You look at that playbill.com list.
You just
top
did
10
it.
List. Yep.
You just did it. And you met up with your friends at Unifieds and you did whatever you did. And now it's so interesting. Kids, young adults, young students, pre-college people, I've never heard them talk when I go, where do you want to go to school? So many of them nowadays say, well, it just depends on money, how much money I get, how much. I'm like, wow, that was not part of the equation. And not because, and I knew that it was like going to be hard to pay for college, but
yeah.
that was like the figure it out later for many people today.
For many of us in our generation. Yeah, absolutely.
For people today, it's now the, well, what am I going to get in terms of financial aid and help, and what does my state give me? And I was like, you know, that completely changes the game. And it's also this maturity shift.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I wish I heard more of that. I do think it's been an uptick in that of like financial awareness of, and that has a lot to do with, I think, just society as a whole has questioned the worth of a college degree. I think in our generations, the idea of like a college degree being worth its tuition was not in question.
Right.
And that is definitively in question in today's era.
Especially with what we do. I think, you know, because we've seen so many, how do I put this lightly? Not the best person in the room for the job get the job.
Yep.
And we see that there's something on their resume that has certainly helped that happen, aka what school they went to or whatever it is. Or I think that has spurred a lot of conversation, being like, well, if I'm the most talented person in the room and I'm not booking these gigs, even though I meet every single requirement and I was the best, you know, that also spurs another conversation of like, well, what does that mean to be the best person for the gig?
In a subjective field. I mean, you know, it's a subjective field.
It's true. It's so true.
Best is arguable always.
always arguable. And I always say to just, you know, no matter what you're doing, be the, just try to be the best person in the room for the gig. This is why I tell a lot of my clients, you know, I said to my rep today, I got an appointment for something and I said no, because one, I don't think I'm going to be the best for it. And two, I don't want to leave New York for the pay that it was offering. And so I'm not going to put my name in the mix for it, because it just doesn't work. But I want everyone to understand that. And people have disagreed with me, but when I started implementing this with my, in my life, I've never found more joy, more happiness, more, more artistic and financial freedom. But yeah, being specific with my art and saying no to things, being like, you know what, I'm not going to go out on that audition. I'm not auditioning for that school. I'm not doing this. I'm not doing that. And reserving that energy for the things that I know are true within myself, the stories that I am to be. That has been my biggest superhero quality in the industry, because when I was saying yes to things I didn't fully believe in or I didn't think were good environments, I'm setting myself up for failure here.
There's no winning.
There's no winning. So why can't we as artists understand, and this is something that I want parents to know too, is why can't we from the very beginning, when we're exploring that, okay, we're not just actors, we're small business people. I love directing. I love photography. I love this. I love that. Why can't we also start implementing on saying no for things? Why do we have to apply for 16 schools and not five that
makes sense,
focus on that are focused on my needs and wants, and but why can't we start that early, so that way when we get to the industry we've already implemented that and we're in the right rooms?
I wholeheartedly agree, and I think it is one of those pieces. I think why I built this business was to, it may sound like odd, but was to lower suffering of artists.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, like, to let artists be in the saddle rather than being dragged by the schools and then by the industry, and it's all by happenstance. I know in my own personal career, this is similar to you. When I started taking charge of what I was doing, when I started really understanding what are my attributes? Like, what are the things that what are my aptitudes? What am I naturally really good at? And how can I, you know, harness it and use it and lead with it, versus, well, whatever you say, I'll do.
Right.
It made a huge difference. And students and applicants and artists in general, you are not without agency. You have agency, and often it feels like you don't, but you always do. And similarly, going back to, I don't think an artist can afford to not understand their mission. I don't, to understand the goals. The goals and mission can change. The goals and mission can have some fluidity to it. But if you're just waiting for someone to validate you in this industry, boo-boo, not it.
Not the right industry for that.
No.
You know, I'm proud of myself because it's January 3rd and it's 3 days into the new year. And I noticed, I said, I don't know how long this will last for, but I'm proud of myself how much I've done it so far. But I've been implementing no into my life a lot more recently. And there was a moment where a big name in our industry, someone who I've loved for a very long time, is looking to work with me on something. And the plans were made about something, and I'm trying to be very vague here, but I'm trying to also be specific. Plans were made. And it was set in stone, and then the plans changed, which would have, if I had said yes to it, be an expensive thing on my part to change. Yep. regarding schedule and whatever. And I said no. And I am a person that, especially if it's influenced by someone I love and admire, and that in this industry, there's a lot of that. Oh my God, I can't believe I'm working with this person. I just want them to like me. I said no. And I comfortably said no. And you know what they said? Okay. And it felt good.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
It's literally the monster at the end of the book, yeah. Grover. It's like, oh, that's all it is.
Yeah, and it was it was great. It felt good.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I used to, like, as an actor, I used to do a 2 out of 3 was like my litmus that I would do for acting gigs. When I got to a point where, like, you know, I could sort of say yes or no, I had 2 out of 3. If the pay was great, if the pay was good, if the people were awesome, or the project was interesting. If it was 2 out of 3, I could consider it. If it was not 2 out of 3, I knew I couldn't do it. Meaning I could work with, you know, maybe not the greatest humans or directors, but the pay was great and the project was really inspiring or interesting. Or more likely, the pay wasn't so great, but the humans were awesome and the show was awesome. Like, I could get on board. That was one of those, like, ways I could vary if I knew it didn't at least meet that for consideration. Mm-hmm. Then it was a no, and it right. could be a no. And I felt very little remorse about that. And it's useful to know, where are your limits? Where are your lines? What are you after?
Yeah, we don't have to put ourselves in unsafe, or I don't want to say unsafe, but uncomfortable situations anymore.
Or even just simply undesired.
Undesired. And that's like, good too.
Like that. I don't want to.
Right. And that was sort of like the last thing that came, because, like, I love a litmus test as well. And I write this in my book, How to Be Multi-Hyphenate in the Theater Business. But when you're trying to figure out how to add a hyphen to your industry or to your identity or a proficiency, right? Like, how do I identify as an actor, photographer, producer, writer, podcaster, educator? I think there are 4 things to ask yourself. Does it bring you joy? Does it bring me joy? Do I get paid for it? Is there a paper trail? Like, if you were to Google me, would there be an online presence of it? Or is it on my social media? Just something that that goes with my identity. And I think this is a really important one, is does each hyphen or proficiency or talent or whatever you want to call it, does it cross-pollinate and affect the other? Because multi-hyphenating is not, it's not about solo artistry. It's not about taking jobs away from other people. It's not about taking up space.
Yep.
It's actually a very, it's a very lucrative experience, and it also it creates jobs. It's really good for the economy. But cross-pollinating, as in, like, my photography helps me provide an income for projects I can produce and be in, or my audience, something I'm in, will want to shoot with me, and that will provide an income for my whatever it is, right?
Yeah.
I think the cross-pollination is the really, really important thing. Otherwise, we just wind up being multi-talented, multidisciplinary, multi whatever it is, but multi-hyphenating is about the cross-pollinating aspect, the Venn diagram that you're talking about, the I am a small business owner and educator and that artist, which is what I think you have so beautifully mapped out.
I love that. I love that idea of cross-pollinating, because then what I also see with a lot of sort of like going back to like creative students is like it becomes this binary. Right. I either go whole hog or I cut it out entirely and I study economics. And to me, it's like college is like the most beautiful place to do the exact opposite, is to cross-pollinate your economics studies to your theater performance, to your history lessons, right? Like college is really about connecting the pieces and bringing them together and then doing that in your life. Like I love, because it keeps things active. Nothing is for naught. I've talked to so many, you know, post grads who went down a responsible road, quote unquote, and their feelings of compartmentalization is so, it's so harmful. You know, it's so harmful to feel like, oh, well, I couldn't afford to do that. I didn't like the idea that you couldn't still allow art, theater, creativity, writing, even in some level, even just having the door open to it, can cross-pollinate your law studies, your medicine studies, your educational studies, and your career. So I do think it's about also like something about the cross-pollinating is allowing the door to be open for magic, allowing the door to be open for spurts of inspiration. And I think that's so, so vital to, you know, a life fulfilled. Maybe that's a bold statement, but I really do think it's a secret sauce to a life fulfilled.
It's so funny. You know, I like researching niche things about the industry. You know, we've connected over this, like Broadway history, of course, like,
oh my gosh,
my
favorite.
Ways. Right. Yes. Of course. You know that.
Who's your Elphaba? Yes.
Who's your Elphaba?
I saw Adina originally.
Yeah, me too.
Bring it. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So, you know, but more so like who did you see in I Love My Wife? You know, like I love a good reference. So, Joanna Gleason.
Joanna Gleason. Exactly. How
so,
dare you?
Yeah, exactly. So, I love that. I love Broadway history, but also I love like the niche aspects of the industry. Like, when did multi-hyphenating become very popular? And it's so funny because I think, and again, right, this is my book, I've talked about this to different groups of people, but multi-hyphenating started when theater started, right? We have a story to tell, we are going to get this up, and it was a news source. This is how, you know, it was all about the community. And somewhere along the lines, even in Elizabethan era, like in Shakespeare times, but like somewhere along the lines of like the 70s, 80s, we lost it. Because I think that was when the trope of, if you do anything else, you're not an actor. If you could see yourself doing anything else, do it. And those who can't do, teach. Those dangerous tropes that go, well, if you're not doing this, then you're not of that. And I think it scared a lot of people. So what they did was, they were so prideful of being actors, which I'm prideful in being an actor. That's why I'm so protective of it. That's why I say yes to certain auditions and no to certain auditions. Because when I'm in a room, when I'm this is my career too, mine. I'm not saying it's yours or whoever is listening to this. This is my career. I don't want to be in bad rooms. I don't want to be in awful rooms. When I'm an actor, I want to be set up for success. I want to be working with the right people. I want to be saying the right things. Okay? That's for me. Maybe not for you. Maybe not for this person. You want to go to show. It doesn't matter. But that's for me. And I think that somewhere along the lines, people that were very proud of being actors or wanted it so desperately heard that and shut off every other possibility of themselves.
Yes.
And somewhere along the lines, it just trickled down into that's who we are now.
And frankly, it's trickled down into the training programs. Like that is that I think the trope has lessened its death grip, you know, but I would still say it's very much present, unfortunately. And it's so interesting, like historically, because when I think of like that moment, the 70s and 80s is when there was a great time of scarcity, specifically on Broadway, specifically in New York, specifically, you know, amidst the bankruptcy and the AIDS crisis. And so it's a very interesting moment that came out, pointing it into the 70s and 80s, where all of a sudden the idea of just being an artist, it wasn't, I presume, prior to that, it wasn't so life or death. It wasn't so, there's no other option. And yet, post this 1970 moment, it is certainly, it's a pervasive thought. I know it's something I felt. I truly felt if I did anything outside of musical theater and I was Broadway or bust, if I didn't make it to Broadway, I would have felt some sense of failure. Mm-hmm. And I know that's incorrect. I know that that is incorrect. That mindset, while did I land in New York on Broadway? Yeah, but it didn't actually help me in my larger trajectory of being a creative, of being a multi-hyphenate, of being, you know, the best artist I can be. It actually was a deeply limiting belief that wasn't particularly useful.
I saw Here We Are last night.
Oh, I'm jealous.
And that deeply revived my hope for the theater.
Oh.
Now, here's the thing. We're talking about maturity and we're talking about how the college audition search has changed. But I also think young people, and this is part of my like, oh God, you know, my hope for the theater was dwindling, aren't doing shows that push them when they're younger. Like, and this is not to knock shows that are popular and are good, but everyone's doing them, right? Like, yep. Mean Girls, Heathers, Carrie. You know, it's so cool to see Carrie such a popular show now. When we were younger, it was, you know, if you had the...
Oh, it was The Pariah. Yeah.
It was The Pariah. And if you had the bootleg of The White Stairs, you know, you knew you were a theater girl. Yeah. If you had the bootleg with, yep, Betty Buckley and Lindsay Haitley, right? So, so watching that change is so interesting. But I just feel like when I was younger, I did Rocky Horror when I was 13. I, with my parents in the audience, right? Like, we were all 13 to 15 years old in full drag. Full drag. Latrice Royale, right?
Come on.
Latrice Royale did the makeup for my friend Michael, who played, you know, Frankenfurter in that production, okay? Like, we did Rocky Horror. We did Scarlet Pimpernel. We did Jekyll and Hyde. I did Dark.
We did Assassins and Nonsense in Rep.
Okay. This is the thing here. That was such an education. And not only that, we handled it with such care.
Yeah.
We handled it with such care. Why aren't younger people today digging their teeth into rep like that anymore? Where why aren't teachers or youth theater programs saying, you know what, you might not like this at first, you might roll your eyes and be like, why are we doing this, but this is why you're gonna like it and this is gonna be fun?
Well, it's so funny you say that, because part of my mission at my 4 years at OSHA was to do that, was to bring in seasons that were daring, that kept students on their toes, We did the high school premiere of Jasper and Deadland.
Cool.
We did the high school premiere of Now Hear This, the sequel to Title of Show. And we did that all in, you know, quarantine. We did shows like Drood. We tried to push, you know, what it meant to do theater. Mm-hmm. And it's, I will say, it was really tricky because a lot of students, it's, there's a fear if they don't have a YouTube clip to replicate. I think there's a legitimate fear of like, if I haven't seen it before, wow, then it's a scarier process. So I know even like in my time at OSHA, I had to like really prove my trustworthiness, that if I chose something, it was going to deliver, that they could trust. And I felt the difference between year one, the side eye I got about Jasper and Deadland of like, I've never heard of that before.
Right.
What are you doing? To when we announced Now Hear This, people are like, great, it's something new. It took 4 years of experiencing that and trusting that. And I think, frankly, I just think it's really hard earned. I think it's really, really hard earned in today's society. And part of that is sort of the comfort of being able to watch Shrek on YouTube, or being able to look at something and thereby replicate it. But I think to your point, and what I would encourage theater directors to do as best they can, because again, money is tight,
right,
like the time is tight, resources are so scarce. I get it. It's very simple to be like, well, just do a musical you don't know. But it's in them not knowing that they actually develop their curiosity. It's actually where they develop their interpretive skills rather than their replicating skills.
There's so many levels to every conversation in the theater. Like I was talking with someone else about this, who's also an educator, and he said, well, for us, it has to do with competition. There's a lot of competition in this person's area where there is a lot of youth doing theater. So they will flock to where their friends want
100%.
To do.
Yeah. That is like the outside groups. And, you know, students don't know what they don't know. And so they're going to lean towards comfort. And doing the Addams Family, no shade to the Addams Family, is going to be more comfortable than doing a studio production of Quilters, you know, like that's, and we did that too. And it was stunning. And it went to International Thespian Festival. Like it was a stunning project, yet fully understood why someone might've chose, you know, the local children's theater production of Addams Family over that. And I think you're just constantly at that whim, and it is a tough gig. It's a tough racket, but I do feel good about like bringing in some outside thoughts. And I think long-term there's actually great, great benefit to it.
You want to have, you know, you want to have, I feel like what I loved about my season in high school was we did, what was it? Sophomore year or freshman year. We did Big the Musical.
Oh, come on, Danny Jenkins.
You know, I played young Josh, which was the best. I loved it so much. We did Big the Musical. Oh God, what else was it? It was Big and it was Big in a class act.
Yes.
Okay. And then sophomore year was Cats and Last 5 Years. And then junior year was You're in Town and Antigone, I think. I think they did like a... Right. They took away one of the musicals and put like a main stage play in that.
Bring it on.
I don't remember. And then senior year was The Producers and Elegies, A Song Cycle. And the material that I learned and the things that I got to do, and it helped me, you know, it shaped who I developed, my humor, my sense of humor, and my, wow, I don't know. And but here's the thing, maybe that's what is really beautiful about the experience, was that it was my experience, was that I took away what it was, and not everyone is going to take that away. And those,
yeah, and for some other kid maybe in your school, right, you know, was like, why can't we just do Annie? Right. You know, who knows? It's I do think that's where it does become, you have to read your community, you have to read, you know, when I went to OSHA, and again, I taught at OSHA, these were the diehard,
yeah,
they want theater all day every day. So part of my mission for them was not just theater introduction, but like actually doing deep studies in ideas and challenging them in ways that were appropriate to their level and their age. And I think every school really has to be responsive accordingly. And, you know, some schools doing Jasper and Deadland isn't going to be a great option versus, right, if it's about, you know, again, these resources and these experiences are not equitable. They don't get handed out equitably.
Right.
And I think there's something really important about making sure programs are responsive to their communities.
It is huge. That is huge. And also tying in being a multi-hyphenate, you know, these are the opportunities where you could say, all right, you know what? Maybe the show doesn't call for who I am, but maybe I could stage manage. I've always been interested in stage managing. Maybe I could assistant direct this one. These are the times where
those are the experiences. And I had more times where it was those sort of leadership positions, those administrative or artistic directing assists. Those students walked away with gold.
And better actors.
Yeah, 100%.
So like, if you're a young person listening to this, like, take those experiences and they will make you better actors. You don't have to be on stage 24/7 for you to be a better actor.
Please.
It's all about understanding how the theater as a whole works. And I'll never forget my first assistant directing gig, and it was Aladdin Jr. And it was... I mean, it was the perfect gig because it's my favorite, you know, it's my favorite Renaissance Disney movie. And I kept saying to the director, Tori Vell, who passed away, but, you know, wonderful, wonderful woman. And we think about her all the time. And, you know, I said, Jafar needs to come there. Because then, and she would go, oh yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Or what if this happened, or this is something that's really cool in the movie that maybe we could, and she listened and I felt heard, and it made me feel, you know, I then was able to ask myself those questions as an actor. Well, what if we did this? And what if he did this? And said, it just, all of these experiences start early.
You have an awareness of the world around you, especially for the actor folk, like, get an awareness of the world around you. It's vital. It's vital.
Scott, you are amazing. How can anyone listening to this work with you, get in contact with you? What's up?
Easiest way is to sort of find me on my website, www.creativecollegejourney.com. You can also email me at scottbarnhart@gmail.com. I do free 1-hour sessions with any family who just needs some help looking at their college plan. So by all means, reach out and sign up for some slots and some workshops.
You are the literal best, and thank you for listening to Dear Multi-Hyphenate. Please rate, comment, subscribe, do all that good stuff, tell your friends, your family, you know the drill. And follow on Instagram at Dear Multi-Hyphenate or at The Michael Kushner. And thanks as always to the Broadway Podcast Network. And oh, that's my book. Did you, what
is that? I had this book this whole time.
That's my face.
Look at that.
Buy the book.
Buy the book, you guys.
I think these are the same headphones too. Anyway, bye.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.